Senate Judiciary Committee to order today. Our first item of business today is to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 956. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 956 would amend ORS 166370 in order to allow school district boards to prohibit persons with concealed handgun licenses from carrying firearms on school property. The prohibition, if applied by the school district board, would be applicable to the public building that is the school. It would be applicable to a school bus or to a school activity vehicle controlled by the school district board. If the district opted to implement the prohibition, it would also be required to post notices outside the public entrances to each school to which the prohibition applies.
Thank you. This bill arose out of an Oregon School Board Association resolution that was passed last summer. So we will start off with Jim Green, representing the School Board Association, and Mark Chisholm, who is a member of the Tiger Tualatin School Board. Maybe we could, Mr. Bennett, if you could do that. Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Senator Burdick, and members of the committee. My name is Mark Chisholm. I'm a resident of Senate District 13, and I'm a school board member with the Tiger Tualatin School District, and I'm pleased to be here today. I did have the pleasure of addressing you previously a few weeks ago, testifying in support of a Senate bill that would have permitted local school boards to the authority to bar concealed weapons permit holders from bringing guns into our schools. I won't repeat my testimony from January, but I will reintroduce my personal background that has an impact on my personal perspective on this issue. I am a gun owner. My gun safe stores a variety of firearms, many of which I use regularly, some of which have, frankly, great sentimentality to me. My grandfather sportsterized a .30-06, which I used for a number of years, and I value that. My family has a history of firearms usage and hunting. I took a hunter safety program at 11 years of age or thereabouts, and I earned a marksmanship merit badge as a scout. I'm a veteran of the United States Army Reserve, where I used a variety of military weapons. And I'm currently a member of the Tri-County Gun Club and enjoy hunting and shooting. So these are all ingredients of my personal history. And I see nothing inconsistent with that interest, that passion on my part, and the desire to see Senate Bill 956 pass this committee. I don't feel in any way, shape, or form as though Senate Bill 956 threatens my privileges of gun ownership and gun usage as a citizen. This is purely an issue of school safety. Currently, the law says that weapons don't belong in our courts or our public buildings, and bars concealed weapons permit holders from bringing their weapons into those settings. That comparable sort of prohibition should be extended to our schools. And the fact, I personally believe that the fact that our schools are exempted from that is absurd. I believe that Senate Bill 956 actually fixes a hole in current statute. Our school district, like most school districts in the state, has a zero tolerance policy regarding weapons on school property. It's an obvious policy that's a linchpin in our efforts to keep our school campuses safe. And the idea that an adult with a concealed weapons permit can carry firearms into a school, trumping our own ban on weapons, is unconscionable. I've discussed this issue with numerous parents. I've discussed this with fellow school board members, and the discussion is almost always the same. People are incredulous that there is any sort of an exception that would allow weapons on our schools, concealed weapons on our schools. It just makes no sense. I really appeal to this committee that there's been a lot of discussion on that this issue. That actually surprises me. I would really strongly urge you to move forward on this bill. I think the time for discussion's passed. It's a clear and obvious solution to a hole in our current state law. And I strongly urge you to pass this bill recommending its passage to the Senate as a whole. Thank you.
And thank you for your testimony. Are there questions from the committee?
Madam Chair, yes.
Senator Whitsitt.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chisholm, you are aware that passing this law would preempt the preemption law, so it would change the entire face of the gun control in Oregon. You're aware of that, and you still support that?
I have no reservations regarding that.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Green.
Yes.
Senator Starr, I'm sorry.
Just last evening, I talked to a superintendent who is retired now. But a few years ago, we had a teacher whose husband became abusive. She took handgun training. And got a concealed weapons permit. And she carried that weapon to school because she knew that that was the one place that her husband was sure to find her. The superintendent knew about that, and he didn't feel at all uneasy about her having a concealed weapon for her protection. He also said that, you know, there is no evidence that this is a problem. This is an answer looking for a problem. How do you respond to that?
Senator Starr, I understand your perspective, and I do have a slightly different view on that issue. The notion of an individual who is involved in some sort of domestic strife, who feels of such that their circumstance is in such jeopardy that they would bring a gun to school, that person doesn't belong in our school setting at that point in time because it puts all students at risk. The notion of in self-defense, a blazing gun battle in our schools is not one that I think any of us would tolerate in any way, shape, or form. And so the idea that a person is in such dire need of that self-defense, there are lots of other solutions, and I would suggest to you that other solutions would be more appropriate for that individual. Totally understand the concern. And I think in other venues other than schools, it may be appropriate for that person to carry a concealed weapon as an appropriate defense, but not in our schools, sir.
Are there questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Mr. Green.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association. I have had passed out to you a resolution that was adopted by our membership at its annual convention in 2003. And as you can well imagine, I represent 198 school districts across the state and 20 ESDs, 17 community colleges. So we have a very diverse body that represents the Oregon School Boards Association. And you can see, as it says up in the title, as amended. And I shared with you when you had this hearing up in Portland about that, and I'm going to share it again real quickly. The first resolution that came from the Eugene School District said the state should just outlaw the ability for folks who have a valid concealed weapons permit to bring their weapon onto school grounds. That, because of the diverse nature of our membership, didn't fly. They didn't want a total outright ban on it. What they wanted was the ability for local school district boards to debate, discuss, and decide this on their own. And that's what you see before us as your resolution and what's embodied in Senate Bill 956. And we do support Senate Bill 956 as an association. Our membership has adopted this resolution. And the debate and the discussion, as you might well imagine at our annual convention, was varied. We have a large number of our members who are gun owners, gun supporters, members of the NRA, have valid concealed weapons permits. They didn't support this resolution. But we had many members of our school boards who were also those folks who said, but wait a second, I support this because it's not an outright ban. It allows each local school district board to decide this. And I think I told this committee before, I can tell you right now, and I travel the state every year. We do 17 regional meetings around the state. We go to the far reaches of the state, both southeast and on the coast. And I can tell you that probably the 00 school district out in Harney County is not ever going to adopt a resolution that would outlaw handguns in their schools. But there are school districts across the state who have adopted resolutions in support of this bill. The Hood River School District up in Hood River did so. The Ashland School District, the Eugene School District. So there is support from school board members. But let's be real what this bill is about. It's about local control. And I know the opponents of this bill has talked about, well, you could have a mosaic of districts out there where somebody who's a law-abiding citizen, has a valid concealed weapons permit, goes on to one school and they haven't banned it, but they go on to another school and they have banned it. And how would they know when they violate that? Well, this bill's a little bit different than the one you heard a couple of months ago. This one requires posting. And I think that's a common sense amendment to this bill that makes it different than the previous bill that kind of trumps that argument. Because if they're going to do it, they've got to post it. They've got to notify the public. And I guarantee you, I've attended school board meetings, and for those of you that were school board members or have attended school board meetings, if you want to change a bus route, if you want to close a school, if you want to fire a football coach, the rooms are packed. And I would almost guarantee you that if this was on the agenda of school boards, that the folks that are opponents of this bill would also come to those hearings. And that's where the decision needs to be made, is by local school boards on this issue of safety in schools. I've talked to many school board members who have emailed me, phone called me, and said, Jim, what in the world are you doing testifying in support of this bill? I'm testifying in support of local support, which is what our school boards have always been in support of and what this bill is about. I've talked to law enforcement, and I said, let me run by a scenario for you. You come into a school building where you've heard there's been a shooting or there's a gun incident, and you come into a building and there's somebody there in plain clothes with a gun. And that law enforcement officer told me, if they don't have identification that they are a law enforcement officer, my assumption is they may be the one doing the shooting, and I've got to protect myself and the kids that are in the room. So there's got to be some way we find a balance here, and I think the balance is struck in this. This is for each local school board to decide. You're not going to have John Day adopt this. I can tell you that. You're probably not going to have LeGrand adopt this. You may have Salem adopt it, but that's for each one of those communities to decide on a case-by-case basis. And they have constituencies just like you have constituencies. And believe me, school board members are very close to their constituencies because they run into them in the grocery store. They run into them church on Sunday just like you folks do. And when they've done something that the public doesn't like, they hear about it. And when there's issues like this on the table, believe me, they hear about it. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions?
I have a question, Chair. Is there an amendment to this bill?
No, this bill incorporate. This was a redrafted bill because there was a problem with the relating clause in the original bill. And so when we redrafted it, we included the amendment that we had for the first bill, which was narrowing the scope to school property, and we also put in the posting requirement. So there's no amendment. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. I just saw Representative Hannah back there. Are you here to talk? Okay. All right. We will now have Rod Harder and Kevin Sterrett.
Where's the other bill? Where's the other bill? I need to look at it. The first one.
Oh, Bill, Senator Morissette. Excuse me. We will have Senator Morissette first.
Come down, gentlemen.
I didn't see you there.
I didn't think you and I would ever do this.
Oh, yes, we're at the same table. Yes.
My abject apology, Senator. I thought you had left.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Senator Bill Morissette, Senate District 6, representing parts of Linden Lane County. I think more importantly in this case, I do represent the city of Springfield. I represent the Springfield School District, so to speak. I was mayor of the city when we did have the Thurston shooting. This is a very sensitive issue. We do have police in school, but they don't carry a gun in school. They're unarmed officers. I think that, in all due respect to those who are opposed to this bill, I think it is a school safety issue. I agree with Jim Green, who preceded me dealing with the School Board Association, that they do have a local option, which I respect also. I think it's an important bill. And I'll leave it at that. I do appreciate the opportunity to testify. Thank you very much.
And we very much appreciate you being here.
I have a question.
Senator Walker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Morissette, could you tell me whether your Springfield police officers that are in your school, they don't carry weapons, according to your testimony. Is that true in all schools,
no,
do you know, or is that a choice that Springfield School District has made?
Thank you. Madam Chair, Senator Walker, this is a Springfield choice as far as I know. I can't imagine, honestly, I cannot imagine a police officer having to carry a gun in school. I can't envision a circumstance where that would be the case. These officers are there. Actually, it's an extension of the drug program that they have in the elementary school, and these are people to reconnect with students that they have formerly had in the drug, I forget what the name of that program is now, but they're there to have a presence, to create trust between law enforcement and students, and simply to be there as a visible sign of safety in the school after the trauma that we suffered in Springfield at the two high schools. So, no, they do not carry a gun, and I still can't imagine a reason why they would have to in a school.
And I have one follow-up question, Madam Chair, if I might. And Senator Morissette, are those uniformed officers?
Yes.
That are clearly identifiable?
Madam Chair, Senator Walker, yes, they are uniformed officers. The DARE program, this is an extension of that DARE program in many ways, is to reconnect with the students, many of whom made friends with officers. These are basically DARE officers, the ones that were moved to the high schools, the two high schools. So.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you
very much. Mr. Harder.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rod Harder, the Oregon Consultant for the National Rifle Association, and I thank you for allowing us to present our position in opposition to Senate Bill 956 this morning. Once again, we see a gun control bill that's a solution in search of a problem. Occasionally, the Portland Oregonian visits the real world. Not often, but a recent editorial entitled, "The Bill That Packs Heat But No Light For Once Gets It Right." There is no record of anyone with a license to carry a concealed weapon ever hurting anyone on the grounds of any Oregon school, none. Like the bill the Oregonian commented on, Senate Bill 335, this bill is nothing more than one more sorry attempt to do away with Oregonian Second Amendment rights at any and all levels. Lane Community College, whose board published a letter requesting some of the changes set forth in Senate Bill 956, conducted public hearings on their campus on firearms policies that would allow CHL holders to carry there. Board member Jay Botsevich is quoted as follows, "I think it's pretty clear we don't allow firearms on campus." He added that the policy being discussed was unlikely to create any problems, noting the rigors involved in acquiring a concealed weapons permit and statistics showing that mostly law-abiding citizens. That segment of a population has a lower occurrence of crime than even public safety officers. I would feel safer sitting next to someone with a concealed weapons permit than a police officer. During that meeting, held on the Florence campus, not a single member of the public spoke in opposition to the proposal. Yet Lane Community College is one of the proponents of the language in Senate Bill 956. This bill and any bill that disarms lawful firearms owners is not only unconstitutional, it is short-sighted and irresponsible. Short-sighted and irresponsible. That statement has been borne out by recent events. For the record, gun-free zones are an open invitation to individuals bent on creating havoc. Gun-free zones are an open invitation to those obsessed with mayhem and murder. Gun-free zones are an open invitation to enter and kill without fear of response by an armed citizen within. Three tragic events within the last several months support this premise beyond any reasonable doubt. A judge in Georgia was murdered in his chambers, a gun-free zone even for law enforcement officers who were prohibited from having their weapons within his chambers. In Wisconsin, Terry Ratzman walked into a gun-free zone, the Living God Church, and murdered seven churchgoers before killing himself. The murderous rampage in Red Lake, Minnesota, took place in a school that was equipped with a metal detector and was allegedly gun-free. Indeed, it was until Jeff Reese entered and killed the unarmed security officer. Killed the unarmed security officer who was monitoring the metal detector, and went on to murder five of his classmates and a teacher before taking his own life. Before committing that horrid act, he had killed his own grandparents, one of whom was a law enforcement officer. So much for protections offered by gun-free zones. Senators, I strongly encourage all of you and the people responsible for bringing this bill forward to remember these words. Gun-free zones are open invitations to lunatics to inflict murder and mayhem murder and mayhem on the occupants therein without fear of reprisal. Senate Bill 956 is another gun control rule dressed up in kids' read sheep's clothing. To continue to attempt to gut our state's excellent preemption law and establish a hodgepodge patchwork of conflicting laws where citizens are put at risk of arrest for simply crossing a school district boundary line. Far worse, it puts innocent citizens at risk of being attacked with no means to defend themselves. This is a bill with no purpose beyond a step towards total gun control, and it should die quickly here today. Thank you for the opportunity to represent Oregon's 63,000 plus NRA members, and I would be happy to try to answer any questions that you might have.
And thank you for coming. I think we'll hold questions till Mr. Sterrett gives his presentation.
Members of the committee, for the record, Kevin Sterrett, Oregon Firearms Federation. Unlike Senator Morris said, I can think of a lot of times when I'd like to have a cop with a gun at a school. I'm surprised that he didn't see any time when that would be necessary. For several years, one or another version of this bill has been discussed in the Oregon legislature, and there have been two main arguments presented in support of the legislation. The first and the most inane is that this kind of law would have had some effect on the actions of psychopaths like the shooters in Thurston and Columbine. This argument is so ridiculous that it hardly warrants a response, because this bill only addresses law-abiding people. The second argument is that civilians are not competent to have firearms in schools, and if this is the case, then the question must be asked, where else are they not competent to have firearms? Banks, malls, playgrounds? All these places would seem to present the same opportunity for an incompetent civilian to behave irresponsibly, yet we've seen no evidence of this. In the years that we've been hearing bills of this kind, we've been given two examples of civilians with concealed handgun licenses having incidents relating to schools. One is the now famous janitor example, where a handgun was left in a janitor's bag while he worked in a school after hours. The other was the example of a mother who was with her child on a school trip when it was discovered she had a handgun when she attempted to enter a museum with the school. A second example is especially interesting because although this incident comes up over and over, it's never pointed out that the mother did nothing illegal or irresponsible. School officials were simply philosophically opposed to her exercising her right to protect herself and her child. Simple truth is, in spite of all the rhetoric we've heard that only highly trained police can be trusted in a school with a gun, police are no less likely to behave irresponsibly with a firearm in school than civilians, as some of the news stories I've supplied to you show. Furthermore, the undeniable truth remains that in the event of another school massacre, there's simply no way for the police to respond to an event of that kind fast enough to prevent the loss of life. You will recall at Columbine, numerous highly trained police units waited outside for hours while victims bled to death. As the first story in the handout I've given you shows, there's not much reason to think anything has changed. No matter what the intentions or training of any police department may be, a large building full of unarmed, defenseless victims is simply too difficult to secure before much damage is done. The examples of armed civilians stopping school shootings, however, are well known, if tragically underreported. There's no escaping the fact that an armed adult is the single best deterrent to the kind of violence we've seen too many times. The Oregon Firearms Educational Foundation has provided classes for countless women who were the victims of domestic violence. Some I have personally instructed are teachers and other school employees. pass this bill, and you give their abusers one more tool to terrorize them. And I do not agree with a previous speaker who believes that the solution to this is to deny that person their employment. The hours of these victims and their locations are known to their tormentors. If you pass this bill, you'll alert the abusers that their victims are now forbidden by law to protect themselves. Too many children have died in schools at the hands of madmen because there was no responsible adult available, prepared, and willing to protect them. This bill guarantees that there will be more. If you really believe that huddling under a desk while killers methodically gun down helpless children, that's good policy, this is the bill for you. If you believe that kids deserve something better than to be sitting ducks for crazy people, you'll reject it. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Our next panel will be Randy Kafis, Tom Smith, and Rob Wagner. And if Mr. Smith could speak first, he has a time constraint, that would be great.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Burbank, chair members, my name is Tom Smith. I'm the field representative for Local 111, classified teachers and employees of Portland School District. And I'm presently on leave from my regular job at Portland Public Schools, which is as a campus monitor, to do the union work. And I am certified by the state of Oregon through the Department of Public Safety as an unarmed officer, which is required for my job. I'm in support of school districts being able to make a policy banning permitted concealed handguns in school buildings and at events. I have personally seen concealed licensed handguns become unconcealed at school events and cause greater problems.
Madam Chair, could I just ask him a question about that?
Yes, you can, and if you would speak up a little, thank you.
You said in some events you've seen concealed weapons become unconcealed. Could you give examples?
Yes, I will.
You were about to anyways.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
In one situation, a parent arrived at the school angry at her son's teacher and proceeded into the classroom. When I arrived on the scene, the parent was screaming at the teacher, and the parent's boyfriend at the time was in the classroom also, leaning up on the door frame with his jacket hanging open and his concealed gun becoming unconcealed. The children in the classroom were focused on that gun with fear in their eyes. Now, this is not recorded harm. I've heard it stated that there's no recorded harm done by somebody with a concealed handgun. I did see harm done to those students that day. On another occasion, a citizen was walking his dogs and happened into a PIL football stadium. The dogs and the arriving students did not mix very well. Some verbal arguments ensued, which got the attention of the school police, who encountered the citizen and found out that he had a handgun on him. He was arrested, and the case turned out that he was found within his rights because the school district did not have a policy preventing him from bringing that handgun onto the school grounds. Again, the students and adults and everyone that was involved in the scuffle that ensued with his arrest were again very fearful. I'm sure some harm was done there. And both these situations to me seem to exhibit very poor modeling behavior by the adults. We're asking kids not to bring guns to schools. We have adults doing it. I would also like to say that I am licensed as to carry a concealed handgun myself through the state in Multnomah County. And in my 20 years experience as a Portland Public School security officer, I've never, ever had the desire or the need to carry a handgun on school grounds or to a school event. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the committee? Thank you very much for your testimony. And you're free to leave when you need to. I know you have to get back to Portland. Mr. Wagner, did you want to say?
Madam Chair, Rob Wagner with the American Federation of Teachers Oregon. I was just here with Tom. So
okay.
I just want to say AFT Oregon represents numbers from pre-K through to higher education, classified school employees in Portland, Hillsboro, Skip Roos, and John Day, and we have a long-standing policy and active involvement in promoting safe and secure learning environments for students, teachers, and classified school employees. And Senate Bill 956 is consistent with that principle.
I appreciate that very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Kafis, thank you for coming.
Yes. Public Safety and Security Director for the Beaverton School District. I'm here in the directive of Beaverton School District 48 School Board and our Superintendent Jerome Colonna. As a Public Safety and Security Director, my time is spent, a vast majority of my time is spent dealing with custody disputes between parents and situations in which parents are either angry at staff or are angry at other children that they find in the school setting. People have said that the concealed weapon holders are rational people, some of the most rational people they would come across. In my job, I see rational people become irrational when you do one thing, and that is when you perceive that you're hurting their child in some fashion or form. And this is the case with custody disputes and with other altercations between other children. It is at these times that rational people behave irrationally. And we're asking the passage of this bill to take that weapon away from them while they're at their school, dealing with situations and problems with their children at the school. Another thing that I've seen this year is a rise in airsoft guns and BB guns that children have brought either to school in their vehicle or brought them onto the campus. And I fear what our rational parents would do if confronted with one of these airsoft or BB guns. The realness in the lookings of those airsoft BB guns is unbelievable, and I would fear for what the reaction would be from a parent who is already perhaps irrational due to situations that have occurred at the school. Another question I would ask is if you're carrying a concealed weapon on a school, and for this teacher, where are you carrying that weapon? Is it in your purse? Is it in your briefcase? Is it in your closet? Person? Where is it on your person if it is? And what does that do for you? Just last week, I encountered a student who had in his possession a set of keys. Doesn't sound too bad, except when you find out those keys were to the gun safe at home. And he was soliciting other students to go home with him and open up that gun safe and retrieve those guns from the gun safe. Kids are extremely smart. If you're bringing a gun to school, I would think it wouldn't take much to find out where that gun is being stored or held, where that gun is. And that causes me great concern to know that if a person is bringing their concealed weapon in a purse or a briefcase, how secure is that purse or briefcase while they're at the school? Is it with them? Do they put it on the counter when they enter the classroom? If not, do they leave it in the office? And then again, if it's not on your person, what good does it do you? Another situation I would fear is if a concealed weapon holder did in fact observe a non-concealed weapon on another person, what would be the reaction of that concealed weapon permit holder? Our officers do carry weapons in our classrooms. They wouldn't do it any other way. But that's our community, and that's what they've decided for our community. I can't tell you what my school board would do if this legislation is passed, but I do know they would follow the wishes of our community. And if our community wished to protect their students, their kids, from anybody bringing a gun into school except for law enforcement officers, that would be their choice. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Capus, you said that you do carry guns in schools. What sorts of training do you have to have as a law enforcement officer to bring a gun into a school?
Department of Public Standards and Safety does dictate the training for police officers in the state of Oregon, and I know that our officers go through that minimum training at least 4 times a year, if not more, on an annual basis.
Okay, and do you know what amount of training you have to get a concealed handgun license?
I do not know that. I do know that a major part of the training for our law enforcement officers is shoot, do not shoot scenarios. When do you shoot? When don't you? Is this person a threat? Is this a person not a threat? And I would hate to imagine my child in a classroom with a person who hasn't gone through that training to know whether their shot's a clean shot, whether their shot's going to endanger other people behind them or around them, or if it's just another concealed weapons permit holder. Currently, if concealed weapon holders are bringing guns into our school, we don't know who those folks are. We don't know who's carrying the guns and who's not. And that brings me great concern as well as security director, safety and security director.
So you're saying that part of the training is not just on how to operate the gun, but do they go through simulations to fine-tune their response to when you shoot and when you don't and make that decision in an instant?
Exactly. And I would hate to imagine somebody who wasn't prepared for that to be faced with that situation. Again, even ask where would the gun be, and how would they get that gun? How would the concealed weapons permit holder get to it in order to avail themselves?
Okay, thank you very much. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Okay, now we will take Donald Jacoby and Doug Berry. Flip a coin.
Senator, members of this committee, I am Donald J. Jacoby. I am a firearms and self-defense instructor certified by the State of Oregon Board of Public Safety Standards and Training for unarmed and armed officers. I only have a couple of things I want to do here today, and they're called fact or fiction. Fact, no person in this state or any other state that possessed a concealed handgun license has drawn that firearm and slaughtered teachers, students, or themselves. Fact. Not in this state or any other state has a person with a concealed handgun license been overpowered and had their firearm taken away by a homicidal maniac in any school. Fact. Parents with concealed handgun licenses have, in fact, stopped deranged students from killing. Fact, not I or a very large number of the people who I have trained consider themselves first responders. Fact, a large number of the people I have trained are indeed first responders. Fact, I have several thousand hours of training and at least 120 hours of refresher training every year, and I am not a first responder. But I carry a firearm everywhere I go. And if someone decides to hurt my children, my grandchildren, or my great-grandchildren, or their friends, I will do everything in my power to not let that happen and pray that the first responders are timely. Fiction. Jeff Wess, John Jason McLaughlin, James Sheets, Robert Staunheiser, Chris Bushbacker, Charles Andrew Williams, or any of the other killers that cause carnage in our schools would have been stopped by Senate Bill 956, or for that matter, any other bill that disarms the honest citizens. Fact. No, this is a question. Why is there always some legislation that wastes our time and money trying to create a solution for some kind of problem that does not exist? Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, for the record, I'm Doug Berry. I live in Lake Oswego, work in Lake Oswego. I'm a paralegal there. I worked in the 1997 and 1999 sessions with Senator Gordley. And I'm here in opposition of this bill. You know, my daughter is turning 5 this year, and there are several reasons, but this is yet another one why she will never go to public schools in Oregon. People talk about improving public schools in Oregon, and I see it as a sinking ship. I will not allow my daughter to go someplace where I can't take her and know that I can protect her from criminally insane people like Kip Kinkle. Much is being made here just a few minutes ago about the training of people with concealed handgun licenses. While it's true that the requirements to get a concealed handgun license aren't as stringent as what a police officer might take, I personally have taken many courses, and one in particular I took was informed that at least the classroom portion of the instruction put me above 80% of the officers in the United States who are trained in the lawful use of lethal force. I also was a member at Tri-County Gun Club. There was a knife maker in Lake Oswego whose name is Al Marr, who has since passed away. And back then, his law enforcement tactical matches were open to members of the gun club. I took maybe middle of the pack that day among officers from several states, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, and California. These are officers that are, quote, into guns. These aren't the officers that go in and only qualify when they're forced to. Civilians, after that match, were barred from participating or competing in that match, mainly because the top winners were always members of the gun club, not police officers. There was an article in Soldier of Fortune magazine about that match where an officer made the remark that, you know, they just used stock pistols. Well, a requirement of that match was that everyone used stock pistols that day. There was no custom high-dollar weaponry used. And yet a podunk gun owner from Newburgh, Oregon, soundly trounced everybody there. So I don't see that argument as very much weight. The arrogance of some people to say that a woman who has suffered domestic abuse should be precluded from her place of employment simply because she's a victim of a violent ex-spouse is beyond me. That's all I have today. Thank you.
Just a brief question. Would you support requirements, because I can't remember the exact amount, but the training actually required to get a concealed handgun license is minimal, I think around an hour. And there's no requirement that you actually fire the gun or certainly go through any of these simulators. Would you support
legislation? I don't support laws like that because in some instances you are dealing with people that
But wait a second, you didn't hear my question.
Well, I think
I wanted to see if you would support legislation to increase the training requirements.
Well, I don't because sometimes those just add extra time for people who don't have time, like abused women.
Okay, so you're saying that you're comfortable with the level of training of people who now
are going
to go into our schools.
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Thank you. Okay, now we will take George Russell, Bud Moore, and Chuck Bennett. Well, they do. Excuse me for a minute. I just got word that we have a time constraint from someone. Would you be willing to wait for one more panel? My deepest apologies. We'll take Justin Martin and Joey Faber-Patterson. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Martin, and I'm here today on behalf of Portland Public Schools. I'm very pleased to have beside me Joey Patterson, who is General Counsel from Portland Public Schools, and will speak specifically and briefly to our current policy. We are here today to urge support of Senate Bill 956. We feel strongly that the safety and security of our students and our employees is paramount. We also feel that nobody except law enforcement should have weapons within our schools. Thank you again for this opportunity to be in front of you today.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, my name is Joey Patterson, and as Mr. Martin said, I serve as the General Counsel to the Portland Public School District. Portland Public School policy prohibits anyone except peace officers from carrying firearms onto school district property. A copy of that policy is attached to materials that have been provided to you today. We believe that guns, except those carried by police officers, do not belong in our schools or at school events such as athletic competitions. Our policy and signs posted at all of our schools also prohibit citizens who have concealed weapon permits from bringing their concealed weapons into our schools. Again, we do not believe that loaded guns belong in schools except as carried by police officers. Under this policy, our schools have remained safe places for our students to learn and thrive. We fortunately have not had any shooting incidents that have arisen from someone carrying a concealed weapon into one of our school buildings. Recently, one of our parents who has a concealed weapon permit contacted our local district attorney and inquired as to whether the DA would prosecute him if he brought a loaded firearm into one of our elementary schools. The district attorney responded that they would not prosecute him for this action. This raises serious concerns for the safety of our schools. While we firmly believe that our policy is legal, we are concerned that the pronouncement from the district attorney that they will decline to criminally prosecute him will encourage people to bring loaded guns into our schools. Our school board chairs have written to Mayor Potter and Chief Foxworth to confirm that the police will continue to assist us in the enforcement of our policy by removing anyone in the possession of a weapon from our schools or school-related events. We appreciate the efforts of the committee to strengthen the law and to continue to keep our schools safe. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just learned about this situation not too long ago. There's apparently a division of opinion on whether you can legally exclude someone with a gun from coming into the school. Do you feel this bill would help to clarify the policy and allow you to implement the policy that you already have?
Absolutely. We do believe our policy is enforceable under the current law, but clearly the proposed bill would enforce our ability to do so.
Thank you very much. Any other questions from the committee?
Madam Chair.
Senator Walker.
Are you the ones bringing us the written testimony of Derek Foxworth, the Chief of Police from Portland?
No, that's separate, Senator Walker.
That's separate? Okay.
Wait a second. Maybe I'm wrong. Did you bring the Foxworth?
It came up in the same packet, so I'm just wondering if you're the bearer of that letter.
No, I'm not. I am the bearer of a letter to Mayor Potter and Derek Foxworth,
okay.
but nothing from the chief himself.
Okay. Well, then, Madam Chair, just note for the record, we do have the testimony in support of Senate Bill 956 from Derek Foxworth, the Chief of Police.
Thank you. So noted, and it was my understanding that Chief Foxworth is endorsing this legislation. Maybe it's related, but separately from this testimony. Is there further discussion?
Just one question, Chair Burdick. Ms. Jolly, you did testify that you currently have rules that you believe are enforceable that prevent someone from carrying a concealed weapon on your school premises.
That's correct, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay. My apologies to Wendy Coombs, who was scheduled to come up with Mr. Harder before. I'd like to call you now, and if you'd like to bring Mr. Harder back with you, please feel free to do that. And we will also take Jared Broadfoot.
I don't think Mr. Harder needs to be here, if that's okay. All right with you.
My apologies. Your name was here clear as day, and I just passed it up.
Honorable Senators, Madam Chair, my name is Wendy Coombs. Thank you for letting me be here today to address you regarding Senate Bill 956. Getting to speak to this group of senators is becoming an all too common occurrence. I teach in the public school system, and I am here today to show my support, show my opposition to Senate Bill 956. None of the Oregon or nationwide school shooting tragedies have ever been caused by anyone who has applied for, been reviewed for, and been issued a concealed handgun license, or CHL, not just here in Oregon, throughout the nation. There have, however, been several instances on school property where legally authorized CHL holders were able to intervene in violent attacks perpetrated by murderers on defenseless students. Through their proactive actions, these CHL holders prevented additional loss of life in these incidences. I am sure the families of those survivors were exceedingly grateful to the individuals who prepared themselves for a worst-case scenario nightmare at considerable personal effort and cost. And if you're interested, I would be happy to go over some of the details of these incidences later on. The most recent school shooting happened last month, March 23rd at Red Lake High School in Bemidji, Minnesota, as I'm sure that you are aware. The unfortunate loss of life there was a tragic waste of human potential. As I thought about this incident, some things came to mind, which a fellow by the name of W. Clark Aposhian, who is a member of the Utah Department of Public Safety and Bureau of Criminal Identification's Concealed Carry Review Board, well stated. He writes, "This situation, like other recent mass shootings, is frustrating in that we believe they are largely preventable. This is yet another shooting in another place ignorantly perceived as safe because of signs and policies that prohibit weapons. They pay lip service to security procedures and personnel and place feel-good signs restricting weapons. Ignorantly, we assume that a sign stating no guns allowed will protect us. Anti-self-defense groups seek to promote their ideologically driven agenda by fear and untruths, which fuel and perpetuate the public's misunderstanding of the facts. These groups had an ideal situation at the Red Lake High School. There were no guns allowed by Minnesota and by tribal law. There was a guard and a metal detector present at the entrance. The shooter was on home study. He was barred from the school grounds. He was too young to legally own, let alone possess, firearms per state and tribal law," unquote. Now, it's interesting to note, as I continue Mr. Aposhian's statement, those firearms were not obtained from a gun show. Those firearms were legally registered, and they came from the home of a law enforcement officer. Now, despite these restrictions being in place, this tragedy was still perpetuated. What additional laws would have prevented this or other recent and related shootings? Mr. Aposhian states that this and other shootings, quote, occurred in gun-free zones. 95% of those shot in these instances were not allowed to carry firearms. Police were targeted because their weapons were visibly a threat. Shooters were able to kill unimpeded, knowing there would be no return fire. Indeed, we cannot state for a certainty what would have happened had an employee at the Red Lake High School been allowed to carry a concealed firearm. However, we can state with absolute certainty what did happen when lawful concealed carry was disallowed. How many people were killed at Red Lake? Off the school ground, 2 adults. On the school ground, 5 students and 2 adults, one of them a teacher running the students into a classroom to try and protect them. 7 lives were lost, all within a mere 10 minutes. Since the hearing on Senate Bill 335, there was an incident where a student brought a toy pistol to my school. The student made threats to kill other students, some particular teachers by name, myself included. The student then said that they would shoot themselves. It is an understatement to say that I have thought a lot about this since then, and that this issue has been brought even closer to home for me. It was only a toy pistol, but this is just an example that almost every Oregon school is potentially vulnerable to that sort of a real attack. Why would you want to give sick and evil individuals the opportunity to kill innocent children by passing this legislation? They are not the kind of people who are going to be regulated by any of these sorts of laws that you are trying to pass. This has been demonstrated with every single school shooting where schools and children are most vulnerable. It is the people who are already obeying the laws, including those legally authorized to hold a concealed handgun license, who would obey this proposed legislation and thereby also become vulnerable. Do not pass this bill. It should not even be brought to the Senate floor. It is the wrong way to make schools safer. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jared Broadfoot, representing the Oregon Gun Owners, here today to testify in adamant opposition to Senate Bill 956. I will echo the comments and reflect you back to the testimony we submitted on Senate Bill 335. The factual information on this issue does not support passage of this bill. I would like to spend my time today to highlight what this bill is about. This bill is not about school safety. This bill is about a philosophical debate in opposition to firearms and firearms ownership. This bill is about using tragedy of school shootings to push a gun ban agenda. Nothing more and nothing less. The attempt through this bill and a myriad of other bills that have been introduced in this legislative session and in previous legislative sessions are an attempt to demonize guns and gun owners. In this case, concealed handgun license holders have been sought out because they are legally able to possess firearms in schools. Notice police officers have not been sought out and to demonize those folks, even though they are able to legally possess firearms in schools as well. One point I would like to make about the specifics of the bill is I have 2 daughters, one who's 2 and one who's almost a year old. When they're old enough to be in school, and I decide to go pick them up from school, which I will have to do, obviously, and if I have just returned from a hunting trip and I pull up outside of the school, I can be then a convicted felon or convicted of a crime because I had a firearm in my vehicle and if I had my concealed handgun license by parking on the street outside of the school because it's school property. That's one technical problem with the bill, that even if you're driving by the school, you could, if you're pulled over and you have a firearm in the vehicle, you could then be convicted of a crime of illegally possessing a firearm on school property. Another point I would like to make about this bill is that it's in direct violation of the Oregon Constitution, which each member of this committee and of this legislature took an oath to support and uphold. The Oregon Constitution says that Oregonians shall have the right to keep and bear arms for personal protection. The Oregon Constitution is very specific, personal protection. If this doesn't violate the Oregon Constitution, I don't know what does, specifically that section.
I'm not glad to hear, but I'm glad it's on the record, that Portland Public Schools has admitted today that they have rules that violate state law. And I hope the Attorney General's listening, and I hope that a lot of folks on this committee were paying specific attention to that, because our question is, why isn't something being done about this? They are violating state law by having rules that prohibit a person with a concealed handgun license from possessing on school property. If they weren't violating state law, why would I be testifying right now? Why would this bill be needed in the legislature if they did indeed have statutory authority to do so? We've been through this before. The Oregon Gun Owners has, is when the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife had rules on the books prohibiting the possession of firearms during an archery season. We wrote a letter. It got forwarded on to the Attorney General's office. They agreed and said the Department of Fish and Wildlife had no statutory authority to prohibit possession of firearm during archery season because of the preemption law. Portland Public Schools is no different, and I hope and I will ensure that the Oregon gun owners knows that they have admitted on the record that they are violating state law, and we hope that problem will be soon fixed. Like I said, this is a philosophical debate, not about school safety, but about guns and gun ownership in this state and throughout the country. Demonizing guns and legal, law-abiding firearms owners is not the answer. If you want to fix a problem that is out there, which is public safety, then look at increasing penalties for folks who create crimes, not creating laws which criminals will not pay attention to anyway. It's been stated previously on the record today and many times before throughout these hearings that we have to come to and testify in opposition to anti-gun bills, because that's what this is, that this is a solution looking for a problem. We echo those comments. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Questions? Senator, what's it?
Mr. Bradford, ORS 166.170 states, it's a state preemption. It says, except as expressly authorized by state statute, the authority to regulate in any manner whatsoever the sale, acquisition, transfer, ownership, possession, storage, transportation, or use of firearms, or any element relating to firearm and components thereof, including ammunition, is vested solely in the Legislative Assembly. So in your opinion, what would passing this bill do with that statute?
Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt, in our opinion, passage of this bill would completely gut our state preemption law.
Thank you. Follow-up, please.
Please.
And to accentuate your comments about the Portland School District, the last sentence in that state preemption states, ordinances that are contrary to this subsection are void. Quote.
Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt, we wholeheartedly agree, as I stated with our example and dealing with the Attorney General's office and the Department of Fish and Wildlife, that they are in direct violation of state law and something should be done about it immediately.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you. Okay, now we will take George Russell, Bud Moore, and Chuck Bennett, and my apologies for the false alarm earlier. More not here?
I don't know.
Thank you.
It's ahead. Okay. Madam Chair, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. We're here in support of Senate Bill 956. Most of the reasons, I think, have been outlined by previous speakers in favor of the bill. I would like to just mention a couple of things and respond to a couple of the comments that have been made. Please.
This is not for us an ideological battle. We're not here to talk about or to demonize or to question the sincerity, the integrity, I think the genuine commitment of folks who own guns, folks who have concealed weapons permits. All we're asking is that district by district around the state, locally elected officials be allowed to determine whether or not they want to have guns on campus and in their schools. We're not talking about publicly owned streets in front of schools. That's a misrepresentation, I think, of who owns the public streets. We're not stopping people who are driving up from hunting, and they are not felons for driving up from hunting.
We're only asking, as we do regularly, that local school districts be allowed to deal with this issue. There is no question, or at least in my mind, and I'm certainly no lawyer, but there is no question in my mind that school boards who have passed policies have exactly what they've got, a school board policy that says you can't have a gun on campus. A good example, I was talking with the principal of a high school down in the Eugene area regarding what they're doing in that particular school district. And he said that they have a an exclusion of all guns policy in their school district. He has a mall next to his high school, and he has a security guard who's armed from the mall who likes to come on campus and chat with the kids and likes to carry his gun when he does it. And he has asked the guy several times and pointed to the policy saying, you know, we have a policy, you can't come on campus with a gun. Correctly, the security officer has argued, yes, I can. The law allows me to come on your campus with this gun and talk to these kids. And, you know, fortunately, some principals are better at jawboning than others, but that's what they're doing at this point if they want to deal with this according to their own school district policy. So one thing this bill really would do is underpin those districts that are going this direction. I guess one other thing I want to mention, just because we tend to talk about parents, abused women, and others seem to have become the focus of this bill as the people who are carrying guns in schools. One of the, and I don't know if you all realize this, but public schools are currently required to provide an education to adults. We are currently required to provide special education as well as any student who presents themselves saying they need additional education in order to receive a diploma through their 21st birthday into their toward their 22nd birthday if it falls into the school year. This is a person who's eligible to carry a concealed weapon into the school if they can pass all other tests, the training requirements, etc. So we're not just talking about whether or not teachers nor is it confined to whether teachers, janitors, abused mothers, etc., can carry a handgun into a school. We also would have to accept students at this age group that want to carry a gun into the school. Madam Chair, this is a reasonable discussion for the local level on whether or not a school district feels secure under current law in their community with guns either coming or not coming on campus under other legal means, but it really is a discussion that can occur and I think appropriately occur at the local school district level. As Mr. Green pointed out, these are other locally elected officials. They, like you, have to meet with their constituency in church, at the school board meeting, down at the grocery store, anywhere else. And why this discussion can't occur at the local level, I think, is the question before you. And we'd ask you to opt for local control. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Wissett.
Sir, is it your testimony then that the Oregon School Administrators support the repeal of ORS 166.170, the State Preemption Act?
My testimony, Senator, was in support of Senate Bill 956, and I'd be glad if I had a copy. I do have a copy of the bill. That it does amend, not repeal. Amend that section. I'm just not going there on the question of whether or not this is a repeal of that.
A follow-up, please. Could you explain to me how the administrators could believe that this amendment would not essentially appeal or repeal the Preemption Act when it would give 198 school districts local authority to decide gun law on campus?
You know, probably, Senator, not to your satisfaction, but I think that the issue really is gun law on their, or carrying concealed weapons on their campus. That's really, I think you've boiled it down to the issue at hand. And if you believe guns appropriately can be carried on campus, this isn't your bill, nor my bill. That is the question here at stake. But does it repeal concealed weapons law? No, I don't think it does.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you. Mr. Russell, welcome to the committee.
Chair Burdick and honorable members of the committee, my name is George Russell. I'm superintendent of the Eugene School District. I'm here today on behalf of the Eugene School Board to express our wholehearted support for Senate Bill 956 allowing local school boards to limit guns on school property. And I've attached for you a copy of our existing board policy in that regard. In light of the terrible school tragedies around the country in recent years and even recent months, as previously mentioned, educators have tried to proactively address the topics of violence and weapons, and we try to do that with our children every day. So many districts, Eugene included, have enacted very strong, clear policies that prohibit weapons on campus, all kinds of weapons, and offer direct and harsh consequences for students or staff who do in fact bring weapons on campus. In an effort to keep our buildings safe, all weapons have been prohibited, including those that may be carried by employees. A weapon not present can't cause harm, whether by malice or accident. As you know, however, Oregon law currently offers a puzzling exception to sensible prohibitions against weapons and firearms in our schools and other secure public places. Those who have concealed weapons permits are afforded the same weight as law officers or members of the military and may legally carry dangerous weapons onto public school grounds. Further, state law makes the regulations of firearms the sole responsibility and authority of the legislature, leaving school boards unable to effectively address this situation. We believe that Senate Bill 956 is a solution to this dilemma and an improvement to school safety for the following reasons. We believe that the best way to avoid a tragedy involving any dangerous weapon, but especially firearms, is to keep those weapons off of our campuses. And I just want to make a comment here because I know that folks have raised some issues. In the last 6 months, we've had three coaches assaulted on our school grounds, where fans have come out of the, actually parents in most cases, have come out of the stands and physically grabbed a coach because they disagreed with the decisions that the coach was making as the coach of a team. Fortunately for us, those people did not have weapons, at least that we know of. Now, we believe strongly that only legitimate and highly trained law officers should carry weapons on our schools and only as a part of their peacekeeping duties. I do want to just make one correction because I do believe that Senator Morissette did misspeak when he said that the Springfield police officers in the schools do not carry weapons. The school resource officers in both the Eugene and Springfield district are fully sworn police officers and do have firearms when they're performing their duties in the schools. We also believe that local school boards, as the duly elected heads of local school districts, should have the authority to reflect the community's wishes in how they go about protecting the children in their schools. We hope we'll take a simple step to improve school safety by supporting Senate Bill 956. Thank you for your time and consideration. I have attached, as I mentioned, a copy of our policy, which I think may, in fact, Senator Starr, perhaps help answer one of the questions that you asked previously about the situation with regard to a person who was feeling threatened because of domestic violence. Because the policy that we had would allow for an exception to be made if there was clear and present evidence of the need for somebody to be able to protect themselves.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Senator Beyer?
Thank you. You stated that there was a puzzling exception to the firearms law. I'm curious to know what you mean by puzzling. Do you mean that you think the language of 166-170 is puzzling?
Well, what I mean is that I don't think the language is puzzling, but the fact that school boards do have the right to establish policies with regard to what goes on in their schools. You have the legislative piece there that says one thing. School districts have for some time had policies saying weapons are prohibited. You've got federal law saying that weapons are prohibited. So it's kind of this issue of what do we do? We've got a community that wants us to protect our kids, to ensure that weapons aren't on campus, whether it's a knife or a gun. In the Eugene and Springfield areas, you know, this has been an issue that has been raised about what should be the interpretation. And as somebody previously mentioned, some school districts are saying, well, yes, we need to let folks carry their weapons on campus, and others are saying, no, we think our policy holds here, and we don't want people to carry weapons. That's the puzzling dilemma that we're facing.
So, Madam Chair, just because you don't think the language is puzzling that says that ordinance that are contrary to this subsection are void, you don't think that's puzzling at all?
Senator Barr, what are you referring
to?
Yeah, I'm referring to what Senator Ritzler has already read, 166-170, the preemption law. I'm just kind of clarifying. You don't think that the language in 166-170 is puzzling?
It's how to work with the language that is puzzling is what I'm saying.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't understand it. If the language isn't puzzling, it seems pretty clear to me, then do you believe your policy, which has been adopted three times since the passage of 166-170, do you think that is valid and enforceable?
I do. And we've worked with our police department and believe that we do have the right to ask people to let us know if they're going to be carrying weapons on our campus, consistent with our policy.
Has anyone ever challenged or have been asked to leave your campuses?
Not that I know of. Unless it became unconcealed.
Well, if it's unconcealed, it's no longer a concealed weapon. It's called brandishing.
Well, not necessarily. If someone's coat comes open, that's not brandishing, Senator Beyer.
No, we haven't had any incidents with brandishing. We haven't had incidents where a coat is open or somebody has had a weapon in their vehicle on campus and it's been seen.
Do you feel, because you did take the extra step of not just adopting a policy, but going to your statewide organization, the School Board Association.
Absolutely.
And is that in part why you did that?
Yes. Our board feels very strongly that no weapons should be on campus. And that we think that there's enough of a question that to have some clear legislative direction would be helpful.
Thank you very much. Any questions, Mr. Kaczynski? Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. We will take and Tom Hatfield. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Lloyd Moore from Douglas County, and I've had a concealed weapons permit for about 35 years. I've taken training a number of times. I carry one most of the time. I have a stepdaughter that I pick up at high school on a regular basis. And I'm asking you a question. What am I supposed to do with that weapon when I go pick up my daughter? I've never been convicted of a crime.
The background checks are better than most school teachers pass. Why should I not be able to go pick up my daughter? That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
I'm Tom Hatfield from Roseburg, Oregon. I live on a ranch. I'm opposed to this bill. I believe it's misguided and is not necessary. An example would be that in the last year, there have been four occasions when cougar have been seen at the Glide Upper Elementary School. This is a school for kindergarten through sixth graders. And the cougar is right down on the play field with the kids. Four times. They called ODF&W to see if they could come take care of the problem, and they replied simply that no, it wasn't in their jurisdiction and they couldn't do anything. And that left the teachers with the problem of getting kids away from and safely reserved from the cougar. Now, four times is an awful lot of times to have something like that happen, and I've heard that it's happened more than that, I don't know how many more, since then, and that there's also been sightings at a couple of other schools in the area very similarly. Now, it occurs to me that with something like this proposal, we wouldn't have any defense at all of those children. And you, cougars are not something you mess with. They're natural-born killers. If they can kill a full-grown elk, they can certainly kill a child. And police response time at those locations are something around 15 to 20 minutes, even in an emergency situation. We need to think very carefully about what we're doing here and consider the law of unintended consequences. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hatfield is coming from a district where our main problem is raccoons. Are you aware that your local school board does have the discretion not to adopt this? I mean, they have the discretion to allow people to continue bringing their guns in.
I understand that. But the precedent being, and the way I read what I read here, the wording is loose enough that it could be interpreted in a number of different ways when it gets to the courts. And as you know, one of the problems is the legislature passes a law intending one thing, and when it goes to court, it comes out doing something else. And this looks like one of those problems to me.
Well, one of the things we do in this committee is set legislative history and earth to courts. The intention of this is definitely to allow the discretion with the local school districts for reasons that you just presented very well.
Okay.
Thank you. Senator Ringo.
Yeah, I was just going to follow up on that. I really appreciate both of you coming all the way from Douglas County. That's good of you to do that. I have been working, spending a lot of time on a different issue, on Measure 37 and land use, and one of these phrases we hear all the time is one size doesn't fit all. You know, and on land use, I think it's probably, you folks in Douglas County say, you know, you guys up in Salem may think you know what you're doing up in your part of the state, but in Douglas County we've got our own issues, and one size doesn't fit all on land use. And I think it's right on a lot of issues, including school issues. And I agree with Chair Burdick that I don't want to tell you guys in Douglas County what to do. You know, you live on a ranch. I live in a cul-de-sac in Beaverton, okay? And we do live in different communities, and so I don't want to interfere with what you're doing, but we would just like a tool to be able to manage our school how we want. And it seems like that's not unreasonable.
What would be wrong with your school boards setting a policy, as one of the folks that testified said that they did? I mean, that seems appropriate. There is a very strong feeling in Douglas County that the tyranny of the majority is wagging the tail of the dog, which is wagging the dog. And you get the feeling all the time that we're doing things for Portland that are one size fits all, that affect us in very negative ways. They're not positive by the time they get down there.
Well, that's I agree with it. That's why I think one size doesn't fit all in a lot of ways.
But Mr. Hatfield, when the original resolution went through from the School Board Association, it originally did put the one size fits all, and right. The School Board Association itself decided to go this route to give deference to people who want to do things differently. So right. It would be a local decision in your community.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for coming, both of you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, we have Lori Wimmer-Whalen and Tricia Smith. And Martin Taylor. Martin, are you here still? Yes, thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, Lori Wimmer-Whalen, representing the Oregon Education Association, our 43,000 members. And it's my pleasure to be here in support of this bill today, as we were on a previous and similar bill this session as well as last session. You've heard our position before, based on a set of criteria that were developed by our members, which we call our Measures Up criteria. We have four of them, and one of them is student health and safety. And the members of our organization drive the policy that we set, that is set for, which are essentially our marching orders in the government relations team. And so this is an issue that is of great concern to my members, many of whom are concealed weapons holders themselves, permit holders themselves. It's our concern, not so much for the headline grabbing terrible tragedies, the Columbines and so on of our history, because we believe that overall schools are pretty much the safest place for children that you can have. I think statistics show that the home is the most dangerous place in terms of the kinds of things that cause children injury or even death. But we do believe that finding a gun, unfortunately, is a crime of opportunity, and that when concealed weapons are brought onto school premises, the unintended consequence of that may very well be that that gun falls into the wrong hands and curious children playing with them. A tragedy could be averted if sensible people who might not think about those kinds of unintended consequences simply don't bring their guns to school. We think that that's far more likely the kind of scenario that we prevent with local policies of this ilk than because I agree with a previous speaker who said that people with murderous intent are going to break the law in any number of ways if that is their inclination. I remember when I was the director of the Commission for Women, we were debating whether or not to pass a Family Abuse Protection Act, the so-called FAPA, restraining order law. Some people believed that it would be a bad thing to have that because it was just a piece of paper. It was a paper tiger, and folks intent on hurting or killing their partner would do so whether or not there was a restraining order, as if that was a reason not to have a law like enabling people to get restraining orders. And I see this as akin to that. It is true that some people will not be stopped because they are going to break the law, but for the vast majority of citizens who are law-abiding, laws are simply reminders to do the safe thing. And I think that this law is really be about. And finally, we're particularly supportive of the fact that it does build in the local control that you've all spoken about and enables local communities who don't feel that this is a good option for them simply not to go there. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be happy to take
your
questions.
Thank you very much.
Welcome. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association. OSEA is an independent labor union that represents more than 20,000 education professionals working in our public schools from preschool through community college. And I'm here today to offer OSEA strong support for Senate Bill 956. I will try not to repeat what other proponents of the bill have already told you and merely say that we believe that concealed weapons, unless they're carried by authorized law enforcement or security personnel, just simply don't have any business in our schools. We don't believe that anyone needs to carry a weapon when working in or visiting our schools, and that the presence of weapons in schools only increases the risk of harm to our students. School districts are responsible for the health and safety of each child enrolled while they're in school. Senate Bill 956 provides school districts with the option of deciding that concealed weapons do not enhance their ability to protect children and prohibit them in their school buildings and vehicles. Senate Bill 956 provides this option to school districts without being intrusive of a citizen's right to bear arms and is a practical and necessary way to reduce the possibility of a catastrophe occurring in our schools that reaches beyond the control of law enforcement. We believe that in the case of a situation in schools in which children are at risk of gun violence, it's important that our law enforcement personnel be able to control the situation. We don't think that people with concealed weapons permits are necessarily under the control of law enforcement in those situations. And we believe that the protection of students should be in the hands of school districts and law enforcement. With that, I'll answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Taylor.
For the record, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Martin Taylor, and I'm here representing the Oregon Nurses Association. First, apologize to the chair. I had hoped to have a member who would come and testify on our behalf. We have some members who are still very interested in this issue. Some of them were nurses in the Springfield and Eugene area that for a number of years within LA have been very active on these issues because they experienced firsthand the effects of a school shooting. Having said that, I think that the history of LA and this issue of how to deal with gun safety really was launched by a series of national tragedies about 6-7 years ago, and some of that energy has died down. And so when this issue came to us, I wasn't confident we would be involved in this issue at all. I asked our committee to take a second look at the issue because we were asked to support this bill. And having taken a second look, I was pretty impressed with the kind of dialogue we had. It was less a conversation about recent events and more a conversation about principles. The first question I asked is, where does the line between public health and public safety and personal rights cross? We pass legislation and have policies in the state that try to balance those things out all the time, whether it's a speed limit or a motorcycle helmet law, or in the more extreme case, with contagious disease, you can actually order someone quarantined in their house and restrict their movement. So we recognize that there are times where personal rights come second to public safety or public health. Even in the area of guns, we recognize that. There are places you can't bring guns. You can't bring guns in airports, courthouses, prisons. We recognize that there is at least some environments that are safer without firearms. So the question of our members was really, is this the case with schools? Is there a public health benefit to reducing guns in schools? I'm not sure if folks are fully prepared to answer that question. I've heard a lot of things here today that, you know, are new information for us. But I think at the table in our conversation, we had folks who felt very strongly about guns in both ways. And the thing that was clear to me is they felt that on balance, the risk posed to children having firearms in schools outweighed the potential protection they would receive from someone with a concealed weapon drawing in an inflamed situation. And I think that's the position of the Oregon Nurses Association, because I think that there are folks who are probably approaching this problem from the folks that provide care when young people end up hurt from firearms, and that is a common occurrence, and they will err on the side of caution, and in this case, they are more cautious about the guns being present than they are reassured by the fact that people with concealed weapons might pull those weapons in a dangerous situation. So we've taken a position to support this bill, and we hope that the committee will pass it to the floor.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you very much. Okay, now we will have Bob Avery, Greg Bowman, and George Pitts.
Madam Chair, Senators, my name is Bob Avery. I reside in Junction City, Oregon. I am a staff member for Representative Hanna. However, today I'm here on my own behalf. Senator Hanna was here to support me in this effort. I am a concealed carry license holder. I'm here to oppose Senate Bill 956. I'm a fairly simple guy, plain spoken. For me, the simple words mean a lot, and all of you, and I'm repeating something that was said earlier because I think the weight of it is very important. All of you swore an oath to when you took your office to protect the U.S. Constitution and the Oregon Constitution. The Oregon Constitution, and I'm reading out of the rules of the House of Representatives, the Oregon Constitution very plainly says the right to bear arms, military subordinate to civil power. the people shall have the right to bear arms for the defense of themselves. I won't read the rest of the paragraph. You can read it if you choose to. It's Section 27 of the Oregon Constitution. So I urge you to support the Constitution and the oath that you took and oppose this bill. But on a more personal note, I'm a grandfather. I have 8 grandchildren, two children that have been through public schools. From time to time, I'm called in an emergency to go pick up my grandkids. It's a wonderful thing to do. But if this bill passes, I'm faced with at least 3, and I'm hearing from some of the testimony, perhaps even more, bad choices. You know, first I could ignore the law and commit a felony. You might not catch me, because when I carry a concealed weapon, it is concealed. I can drive way out of the way to take my weapon someplace where it is safe and delay picking up my grandchildren in an emergency situation. That, to me, is not a very good situation. If your grandkids are hurt or for whatever reason, you want to get there as soon as you can get there. I could lock my gun in the car, which sounds like from some of the testimony and reading the bill, that might even be committing a crime still, but I could lock my gun in the car. However, I've personally had the situation where 4 times in my lifetime my car's been broken into. 3 of those times has been on school property. I think that creates an even more unsafe situation than the current situation you have right now with concealed carry permit holders. Leaving a gun unattended is not a good solution. And you heard testimony that there has never been an incident, and when I checked, there was never an incident where a concealed carry holder committed a crime with a gun. In my situation, my grandkids live in a position in a rural part of Oregon, right close to a community where there's 3 and possibly 4 school districts they would go to. With the patchwork that this bill intends on committing, how am I supposed to know which school is which at the time I need to go pick up my grandkids in an emergency situation? That also creates a very difficult situation for the public to work with. Finally, I grew up in New Jersey, a much more urban environment than we have here in Oregon. Many of my friends hunted. I did not at the time. Many of them brought their guns to school. We taught gun safety in school at that time. There was never an incident that I'm aware of when I was growing up. And I'm not that old. So I urge your opposition to Senate Bill 956. I think it creates an unworkable situation for people that care to defend themselves and not become a victim. Thank you. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Senator Burdick, Madam Chairman, and members of the committee. Simple analogy. If my name is Greg Bowman from Washington County. Simple analogy. If Mayor Potter in Portland were to stand up and have a press conference and say, you know, I have the solution here to our drug problems. There's just too much access to drugs. We're going to have more regulations on those people who have prescriptions for their drugs because there's just too much drugs out there. We'd all look at him kind of says, what drugs are you on, Mr. Potter? Come on, what kind of solution is that? The analogy here is this law targets the good guys, those who have their prescription. It doesn't target those who are out there breaking the law. The Kip Kinkles of the world would not have been affected by this legislation. The good motivation to make our schools safer, I don't question on both sides. But we have to be mindful, again, of the unintended consequences. Consequences that I notice those who are against this legislation can point to statistics and actual history. Those who are for this legislation have no statistics or history to point to where it is, in fact, preventing future problems. No actual history of concealed handgun license owners killing students on the schoolyards. So
I mean, the attitude that I can only surmise is coming from those promoting this piece of legislation, which would amend our Constitution in the same sense that it was an amendment of our Constitution that did away with the prohibition. So don't bother me with factual history. I have a motion on my side.
Thank you very much. Mr. Pitts.
I'm George Pitts. I represent Tri-County Gun Club. Tri-County Gun Club has 2,800 members. I also represent the Oregon Association of Shooting Ranges, which has over 6,000 members in Oregon. I'm not going to repeat many of the points that are made here, but this issue isn't about children's safety whatsoever. You know, if it was about children's safety, we wouldn't let kids drive to school. We'd have seat belts on school buses, etc. This is a non-problem. As a matter of fact, statistically, it's more dangerous to have teachers on the school grounds than it is to have guns, okay, with license holders, which is kind of ludicrous, I understand. But if you read the papers, you know where I'm coming from. In any case, what this is really about is a chink or a door opener in the preemption law. For me to drive 5 miles from my home to the gun club, I go through 7 political subdivisions. Each one of those, almost each one of those, had a rule that would have made me a felon driving to my gun club with a firearm in my car. Because of that, we passed the state preemption law. Now what we're doing is we're trying to open the door a little bit again. And all the arguments that were made here today will be made next year for why you can't carry a gun in a store, in a shopping mall, in a park, or anywhere else. They're going to be the same arguments until the preemption law is just a matter of history. A couple of things that are just kind of interesting to me. I hear over and over that only a police officer could be allowed on the school grounds with a firearm. Only a trained police officer. We have 2,500 law enforcement officers trained at Tri-County Gun Club. I know all the training officers personally. I've been an officer of that club for about 25 years. We have had one member accidentally shoot himself out of 2,800 members. We've had 5 law enforcement officers shoot themselves or their partner while they're being trained with a training officer. These guys are not the experts with guns. It almost makes me smile back there to hear these arguments. In any case, the deal is we've had 9 anti-gun laws put into the hopper since the last election, and they're all coming from the same source, and this is just one of them. And it's just really upsetting that we're having to waste our time over and over covering the same ground. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much. We have, my apologies, to Marge Easley, Diana Madriotto, Julie Sterling, and Sean Alford. We are not going to take your testimony today because we have people here from Coburg to testify on our next bill, and we are almost out of time. So I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 956 and open a work session on Senate Bill 956. Senator Ringo.
I move that we pass Senate Bill 956 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Ringo moves Senate Bill 956 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
I have a question of the council, please. Mr. O'Leary, in your opinion, passing this bill, what effect would that have on the Preemption Act?
Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt, I think the statute you're referring to is 166.170 sub 2 states that no county, city, municipality, or district may regulate the use or possession of firearms in public places unless expressly authorized by state statute. My understanding, and I made reference to this in the staff measure summary, is that this measure would be the express authorization spoken of in subparagraph 2 of that statute. I believe there is a letter from Legislative Council supporting that opinion. I concur with that opinion. Thank you.
Any discussion?
Just know where that letter from the council is. I don't think I've got it.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that, Senator Beyer.
Mr. O'Leary said that there was a letter from Legislative Council supporting his opinion, and I'm curious to know where that is. I don't seem to have
it. I haven't seen it either. No part of it.
That was distributed in connection with the other bill.
With 335?
Yeah.
That is my recollection, too, Madam Chair. And Senator Beyer, I'll look through my files to see if I have it handy.
Okay, other discussion?
Call the roll.
We definitely need to call the roll. Okay, Senator Walker.
I'm going to look for it here, but Madam Chair, I appreciate this bill and I appreciate the testimony. This bill is drafted pretty narrowly and pretty broadly, but in terms of giving districts the ability to draft policies that fit their needs, but narrowly enough that it doesn't open against the law. So I think it's a good bill, and I think it should move forward.
Thank you. Would you please call the roll?
Senator Beyer?
No.
Senator Pruszynski?
No.
Senator Ringo?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Whitsitt?
No.
Vice Chair Starr?
No.
Chair Burdick?
Aye.
Three ayes, ayes, four nays.
The chair changes her vote to no for purposes of possible reconsideration. Close the work session on Senate Bill 956. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 295. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 295 comes to you from Senator Floyd Pruszynski. It requires that half of all costs and fines collected in traffic cases other than those where state police issued citation be distributed. One half the state police fund to be used for high school driving, one half the state police standards and training. You have the dash two amendments in front of you, which I believe come from Senator Pruszynski, and the heart of those are on page 3. It says, notwithstanding subsections 1C and 2C of this section, that's how money is distributed. The city of Cobourg may not receive any monies under section 1C and 2C of this section for traffic offenses occurring on any portion of the state highway fine. Monies that would otherwise be paid to the city of Cobourg under sections 1C and 2C of this section shall be deposited in the police standards and training account established in ORS 181690 and may be used only for police officer training. I believe they are a substitution for the bill.
Okay. Thank you. We have signed up for this Senator Bill Morissette, and they're looking for him. So why don't we start off quickly with Dan Swift.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Daniel Swift. I am the president of the Oregon State Police Officers Association. The OSPOA represents the sworn troopers, forensic scientists, and dispatchers who work on a daily basis to make Oregon a safer place for all of us. First of all, I would like to state, for the record, that is the opinion of myself, as well as the vast majority of my members, that on the whole, it is bad public policy to have any governmental or political entity receive direct monetary benefit from enforcement action of that entity. It is my opinion that law enforcement and the justice system should never be used or perceived as being a substitute for a direct source of revenue to fund necessary governmental operations. The reason for this is obvious. In this country, we rely upon the voluntary cooperation of the citizenry to enforce and obey our laws and make our justice system work. The citizens support, trust, and obey the rulings of the courts, regardless of their personal opinions, because by and large, they believe the justice system is fair. However, when the citizenry reaches a conclusion that the government or the justice system is biased or not fair, then they will no longer support that system, and then it fails to function. The history of the United States is filled with examples of the citizenry, through simple civil disobedience, causing local and sometimes state governments to disintegrate because the people decided the fix was in, the system was corrupt, and they had no moral obligation to support an unjust government, and they would not support it. As a professional law enforcement officer, I know more than most people how extremely important it is the public have faith and trust in their police force and in the court system. Because the minute the majority of the public loses that trust, then we have anarchy. And I believe that by allowing local governments to receive direct monetary compensation from their enforcement activity, Oregon has started down a slippery slope to losing the public's trust in their justice system. Once a city council or county commission perceives the local court as a source of operational revenue rather than a source of justice, then the overriding concern becomes the financial bottom line rather than one of fairness. Which brings us to today's bill. The state police is in support, or excuse me, the state troopers are in support of SB 295 for a couple of reasons. One, this has a ripple effect throughout all of public safety in terms of whether our law enforcement officers are perceived as being out there for enforcement or out there for revenue. And it affects every single officer in the state of Oregon. That's why we have a concern. The second concern we have is the particular enforcement posture taken on this stretch of Interstate 5 from our statistics is not warranted by any of the normal criteria that the state police uses in enforcement postures, such as high number of traffic collisions, high number of criminal incidents, high number of violations needing special or specific enforcement. We have quite a few state highways within the state that have been designated by the Oregon Department of Transportation as well as the legislature as being safety corridors due to high crash rates, high fatality rates, and other reasons that deserve special enforcement, including excess fines. This is not a stretch of freeway that requires that. As a result, it's received undue attention, undue enforcement, and we feel it. If you look at the total balance of the enforcement posture up and down Interstate 5, it is unique to itself in that one little area. And for these reasons, I know that time is short, and I appreciate your time. I have taken any question you may have.
Thank you. And Senator Morissette is here, and we called on you first this time.
I heard that on the way to my committee.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bill Morissette, representing Coburg, which is in my district. Madam Chair. Senator Bill Morissette, representing District 6, including the city of Coburg. That is in my district. And I'm very briefly going to say that I support the city of Coburg. I support their traffic enforcement. And I cannot understand why anyone would complain about getting a ticket for something that is against the law. If a person is breaking the law and they are held accountable for that, I just don't quite understand that. It is one of the places on I-5 where you can often count on some oversight. Unfortunately, the state police are spread very, very thin. And I think that, as you will hear later in the testimony, there have been a number of significant stops made in that corridor at hours when the state police are usually not on duty. But I just wanted to say that I do support what the city is currently doing, and I see no reason to disallow that. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee? Senator Pisanski.
Senator Marcet, do you believe that the city, if they're citing people outside of their jurisdiction, that they have the authority to put those tickets into their city court instead of putting into the court that's required by state law?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Pisanski, I understand that the city of Coburg is on both sides of the freeway. Is that correct? I mean that they annex the part east of the freeway and that the freeway is within their jurisdiction.
If you're asking a question, there's a section of the freeway that's in there within the city limits now based on the annexation that occurred last year.
Yeah.
My question, though, is if they are operating outside of that jurisdiction, outside of the annexed area, and they are citing them into their court against state law, do you agree with that since you agree with their practice?
I think that they have a right to do that. Now, if it's whether or not it's against state law, it depends on how far they have to chase somebody. And I've seen, you know, if you're in pursuit in law enforcement, you can obviously go outside of your jurisdiction. Secondly, police, I don't think police are ever outside of their jurisdiction as law enforcement officers. And I know that the question is this a speed trap? No. Is it fair? No. I think that they are doing a service. And I just don't feel that if a person is violating the speed limit, which is fixed for the freeway, that there's a problem. I feel that they, if they get a ticket for it, then they deserve the ticket. So I don't have a problem with what they're doing.
Other questions?
Yeah, I'd like to follow up on that. Senator Morissette, I have no problem with the department doing
what they're doing in the sense of enforcing the law if they believe someone is violating the law. My concern is that if they believe that someone is violating the law outside of their jurisdictions, the state has taken a position as to what courts has jurisdiction over it. It's not that if they violate it within the annexed area and then they leave that annexed area and then they're stopped, I'm not disagreeing that they would have the right to put it into their municipal court. The concern in what state law says is that if they're enforcing the law outside of their jurisdiction, they have certain procedures of where those tickets have to be filed. My question to you, understanding that if they are in fact operating outside of their jurisdiction, do you agree that they should be following state law and placing them into the proper court, or do you agree, or do you take the position that they can be cited into a court that is not within the statutes against what has been passed by this legislature?
Madam Chair, Senator Pozanski, if they are indeed violating state law, I think that should be corrected according to the existing statute. That should be clear. Secondly, I remember sitting in this very room during the 1990s when one of the representatives from Eugene tried to get rid of the municipal court system because that money was not going to the state. Representative Jim Edmondson, I believe, was who had that bill. I testified in opposition to that bill. So any fines within that jurisdiction go to the municipal court. Now, you're talking about events outside or incidents outside of the jurisdiction. If that's in violation of the state law, then that there should be some sanctions. And so I don't see the problem with applying existing sanctions to what they're doing now.
Thank you.
Okay.
Senator Byrd, your question?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, you testified that we shouldn't do anything to stop or hinder the city of Coburg enforcing the speed limit laws on the interstate system, or something like that,
yeah.
You said. And I'm looking at the dash two amendments, which I believe Senator Pozanski said that he's like to entertain for this bill, and I don't see anything in these amendments that would prohibit the city of Coburg from enforcing the speed limit on Interstate 5 in their city.
Okay.
So what is it you don't like about the...
I guess I'm okay with that, with the dash twos, and if they allow them to enforce the limit within their city. I just wanted to be absolutely certain that they would not be deprived of that right. I don't think the money, the conversation about the fine going, any fine outside of their jurisdiction going into a separate fund, is that what the bill says? That's what your dash two.
The bill does not say that at this point. Okay. That's what current law requires.
Okay.
The bill actually goes further and what I would call apply sanctions for their activities that have been done outside of the jurisdiction that's allowed under state law. So there's a penalty.
Okay.
Previous sanctions.
Okay. I guess I'm here to defend the right of the city of Coburg to issue citations on I-5 that they have within their jurisdiction and that money go into their city coffers. I'm here to defend that right.
Senator Walker.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment to Mr. Swift. I want to thank you for recognizing
you.
That public perception is extremely important about your job. Yesterday I actually had a bill that passed the Senate floor about golden parachutes for school administrators. Public perception is huge on that issue about spending money where it shouldn't be spent, and it makes it difficult to pass school budgets when we see things like that, and it makes it difficult for people to think of the officers who are protecting us to be out there really protecting us when we have activity that takes place like this. So I just want to thank you for recognizing that.
Madam Chair, Senator Walker, thank you very much. And I do agree with the old adage, it's not the reality that counts, it's the perception of reality. And that is incredibly important in the law enforcement community. We have to have the trust of the public we serve or we will be useless. And also, I would like to make one other comment for the record. The committee is well aware of who I am, but I do want to clearly state for the record I am speaking only on behalf of the State Troopers Association. I do not represent the opinion of the Department of State Police. I don't even know what that is, and I just want to make that very clear for the record. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now we have Mayor Judy Volta and Chief John Bosley and Jamin Kent.
I apologize for the lateness. And
I apologize for the lateness.
It was interesting to listen, and Madam Chair and committee, we appreciate the opportunity. My name is Judy Volta, Mayor of Coburg. I became mayor a little over a year ago. We stepped into a situation that we have not been very happy with. The city of Coburg has gone through a lot of changes. In fact, with me, I am the real mayor. However, with me is the acting chief of police, John Bosley, and the acting city administrator, Jim Kent. And we just recently had an acting finance director, and now we have a real one. So my point is that we are moving towards some permanence and some good solutions and some good changes. It has not been our intention from this time forward and into the future to have ticket revenues or fines and bails be the major source of our revenues. This is something that occurred on the previous watch, and we are in process of taking care of the situation. In my very first State of the City address, I shared with the public that the city is on track to correct the issues. Since that time, our little city of 1,000, although we have 3,000 people that work there because of Monaco and Marathon, in the last 6 months, we laid off 7 full-time employees, gone from a $25 deductible to a $3,000 deductible plan for our employees. The employees each took a 6% cut. They started an employee contribution of $50 a month toward their medical plan. We reduced the court days per month. We turned in 4 leased vehicles, sold 2 of them, and we have been working with the state agencies over time on rescheduling our debt service. Our previous city administrator, our previous finance director, because of actions taken during that watch, there were some things done in which fines and bails represent a large portion of our budget. We are working to change that. It is in half of what it was. It is our intention to have it be only one of many legs of a stool, as it is with every other city jurisdiction. But we are not there yet. Our police are presently on 12-hour shifts, one person per shift. Their backups are the traffic cops that used to be on I-5 more, and this change has significantly reduced the time spent on I-5 with commensurate reduction in fines. So what I'm telling you is, not exactly mea culpa, but that, yes, we had too much of a reliance. We're a small city with financial distress. We're working through that distress. We're working through it not to be a perception or image problem. We have good relationships at this time, and Acting Chief Bosley can speak a little bit more directly with the ways that he has reached out to fellow law enforcement officers. We apologize if we've had a bad image, but what we would ask opposition of this SB 295, because it kicks us while we are down. It, in effect, cripples us from this time forward into the future from really directing the changes that we need to make. We want to work in concert with the state officials. We have 400 new jobs that are coming online at Monaco. We are not over yet. We have much to do. It's a new day in Coburg. As you know, being mayor in Coburg, it's an unpaid position. You get to do lots of hours, and the benefits are out of this world. So I guess my point in telling you is, as a committee, if you can understand where we've been, what we're doing about it, and how we want to work toward a solution. And to please, it's, you talk about image and perception. To have a bill that specifically denigrates a little town of 1,000 is very hurtful. I would like to have a city that would proclaim Coburg as the finest little city. I like good accolades. But when you have something that comes through that names specifically Coburg and isolates it out, we take it as feeling kind of mean-spirited. And we really would like to not have that impression. We would like to move forward to have a good relationship. And I would urge you not to adopt this amendment. I think it would cripple our city. It would address an issue that's no longer there. And it's a difficult time for us, but we are definitely making progress. We have an excellent city council that's working in one accord, good planning commission, good citizens, people that are working with us. And I would say, please work with us and not against us. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next? Welcome to the
committee. Madam Chair, committee members. My name is John Bosley, and I'm the acting chief for the city of Coburg. I began my career in Coburg as a police officer. And in that time, I've seen many changes occur within our department and with our town. Some of them good, some of them not so good. Many people continue to this day ask me why I choose to step into this job given the time frame that we're in. In the point in history where Coburg is, the answer is simple. I love my town. My children go to school in that town. And I have a vested interest in the success of my town. Since accepting the position, I've had to make many difficult decisions. Some of those decisions have included laying off fellow officers that I myself came up with in this industry. There's more difficult decisions to come, I'm sure. For some time, and I'm speaking from someone on the inside, I've held the belief that the Coburg Police Department has tried to project an image of something that it's not. It has taken some time for that image to be built. I'm in the process of tearing that down and rebuilding it back to an image that is reflective of who we actually are. That's a small town police department. One of my first tasks as chief was to send a citizen survey to all Coburg residents. The purpose of that survey was to ask the citizens of Coburg to rank the police department's top five priorities. Of those five, providing 24-hour coverage was number one. Traffic enforcement on I-5 was number five. Since that time, we have put in procedures that have significantly reduced and will continue to reduce the Coburg Police Department's presence on I-5. And with those procedures, I hope to accomplish two things. One, as Mayor Volta has stated, to make the city of Coburg live within its means. And two, to bring us back to what we are. Right now, the Coburg Police Department is comprised of five full-time officers, and they are hard-working, dedicated police officers. There's more to Coburg than speeding tickets. Our officers have received numerous awards from the state of Oregon due to their commitment to traffic safety. In 2003, the Coburg Police Department was chosen as the state of Oregon's Municipal DUI Enforcement Agency of the Year. Our DARE officer teaches his program in our local school on his own time, chooses not to be compensated due to the financial situation that the city is in. Our officers work extremely close with our citizens and with our business community. These officers are volunteers in the community, and they have families of their own. As Mayor Volta has stated, the adoption of the amendments to House Bill 295 would have a devastating and crippling effect on Coburg. And I urge the committee to not adopt this amendment. I also urge the committee to allow us the time to move Coburg forward and make it a success story. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I have a long Navy history. And so my...
Would you identify...
I'm Jamin Kent. I'm the acting city administrator for the city of Coburg. Former superintendent of Springfield Schools had a very interesting time listening to what you just listened to. So I was there during the shooting. But my thoughts today are essentially, as a Navy officer, I know one thing. When you put the pointy end of the ship in one direction and ask it to turn, it takes a little time. It takes all hands, and it takes people knowing where that ship is going and the guidance of that ship. When I took over Coburg, was asked to work in Coburg, I didn't quite realize all of the nuances that we would run into. But what I found was a city that was overextended, that essentially had more employees than it could afford. And there are other things that employee issues that I'll just mention, but I'll move on. What I heard immediately from the mayor was that we need to live within our means. We need to make this a great town, go back to the town that it was, and show that Coburg is a great place to be, and it is a great place to be. In order to do that, we had to take all hands and say, look, some of you we have to leave behind. And the thing that impressed me was the fact that as we went down that path, as Chief Bosley said, there was the consistency in the employees of the city that we want to do this together, that whatever it takes, we're there to make it happen. And so when we cut their salary 6%, when we took away some of their insurance, when we reduced their jobs completely, they groaned, but they said, we know where we're going, the ship needs to change, and we're all moving together. What we have now is a city that is starting to live within its means, but it takes a little time to move that ship in one direction. And the effects of this bill will probably cause more damage that you don't know within the city than it does in terms of any other issues, be they perception or the rest. The city is able to say that by June it will balance its budget, and that the next year's budget will address the deficits that it has and will reduce the projection or expenditures that it will have. In order to do that, it's going to again be the staff working together, everyone on deck, and everyone helping to set that direction for that ship as the mayor has said it. So I would encourage you to think carefully about this amendment before you pass it, and at least look at Coburg and say, we need to help them do what they're trying to do rather than hinder the direction they're trying to go in. And thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Questions?
For
questions, if you have any.
No, I'm sorry.
Senator Pazansky.
Yes, thank you very much. And I guess I'll just throw these out to the panel. You can answer them however you like, or whoever would like. Ticket writing into the municipal court. Chief, I guess maybe this might be more for you since you'd be more hands-on on this. Isn't it true that your officers continue to recite individuals into the Coburg Municipal Court between January 1 of 04 until up until the time that the city annexed the portion of I-105.
Madam Chair,
for tickets that were issued on I-5.
Madam Chair, Senator Pazansky, was a question, are those citations still being routed through Coburg Municipal Court?
I'm saying from January 1, 2004, that isn't it true that the department had officers out on Interstate 5 writing tickets for traffic offenses and citing them into the municipal court of Coburg instead of utilizing the either the Lane County's Central Justice Court or the Lane County Circuit Court?
And I'm kind of confused on the timeline. Is this after the first set of laws that came into effect?
The most recent ones, the 2003.
After those came into effect, as to the best of my knowledge, was it in a position to know at that point, no, they were not being brought into Coburg Municipal Court, that citations were being routed through Central Lane Justice Court in Springfield?
Would it surprise you if I told you I've checked, or I had my staff check with that court, they have not received tickets issued off of I-5 by Coburg, but instead those tickets have in fact continued to go into, did continue to go into your court?
Answer that. I would be surprised at that. I brought along the 2004 statistics that came from the sheriff who keeps them. I asked him to run them. And in 2004, starting February 16th, there were 1,797 citations written going through December. Of those citations, 296 went to Coburg's court, 1,501 went to Central Lane Court.
I'd love to get a copy of that based on what they've told me.
You can have that.
And then also, Mr. Kent, isn't it true that you and I have had conversations about this and you told me that you basically turned the ship around at the end of June, and as long as this legislation didn't go into effect until after June, the city would be able to make its changes?
Yes, we did have a conversation. I told you my attempt would be to change the city around, and I believe I've kept that end of the bargain because we are now able to balance the budget by June. At the time I spoke with you, we were probably somewhere around $600,000 to $700,000 in debt. I'm not sure how we were going to do that. But through the work that the mayor mentioned, we were able to defer some of that debt to the following year, so we were able to balance the budget. What we now have to do is to move forward and put a budget together that will be reduced because we have to pay back still about $700,000 in debt. We borrowed through tax anticipation notes, and we also have in front of the voters local option levy on May 17th. All of those will help us continue forward. But if any of those are not successful, then again, COBRA will be in difficulty.
Can you tell us what is the percentage of revenue for the last 2 years that COBRA has received from citations issued off of Interstate 5 as it pertains to the city's budget?
I did not bring that.
I can't tell you the exact percentage, but I can tell you that we have cut the percentage of revenue in half in the year that I've been mayor. And it's our intention to not have the percentage of fines and bails be a general source of major revenue, but just to be one of many legs, as it is with every other municipality.
Mayor, would it be safe to say that prior to you cutting it by half, that it was close to 45% to 50% of the revenue?
I wouldn't argue with that. I don't have the statistics, but I do know that when I became on as mayor, I was not happy with that emphasis, and that myself and the city council have been working from that time till now and want to continue to work to make that so that we are not dependent on that. And again, what I ask is that you work with us and not make it more difficult.
And Chief Bosley, if I could ask you one other question. Where's the south boundary of the annex property as it crosses I-5?
Madam Chair, Senator Brzezinski, it's going to be south on I-5, right at Reed Service Road. I'm sure you're familiar with that stretch.
Very familiar with it.
It's going to be right there at the Reed Service Road.
Isn't it actually north of Reed Service Road where the property line with the ponds are on the east side that cuts across on a parallel to the road that's on the west side?
The one map that I have only seen once shows that the actual boundary is just right at that overpass.
Isn't it true, or do you know whether or not your officers are actually setting up radar outside of that area to the south of that annex area and running radar on northbound as it comes over the crest close to Eggy Overpass?
I am not aware of that, Senator.
Well, I can tell you that I've seen it, and I've had other people report to me that. And I've actually had someone just call me 2 days ago who got a citation saying that, yes, she was doing 75, 76 based on cruise control speed that she had set. And there's no, and she didn't disagree with that, but she got written for a ticket for 81, and she actually is now cited in your court outside of the jurisdiction.
Senator, if I could get proof of that, I would check into that. I guarantee you, because I have talked to the officers about this issue. I researched it with our court administrator just this week with that very question. And there have been a couple of instances where people have been cited erroneously by the officer into our court. The four citations that we did locate were not from I-5. They were actually on Cobert Road closer to Armitage Park. They were erroneously cited in the Cobert Municipal Court, and those citations were dismissed. Those folks were never even recited into the appropriate court. They were just strictly dismissed. If that is occurring, I would very much like to know about it.
One last question. Okay. Do you know if your officers realize that they cannot set their unit inside the annex area shooting laser or radar outside of the area and claim that the person was inside the annex area?
Yes, they are aware of that.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? Council?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, so I remember 2 years ago when we had this bill before us, and I remember at that time the issue was that we're not only citing outside the city jurisdiction, but we're citing outside the county. And I also remember rumors at the time that you were anticipating an annex of property on the other side of I-5 so that you would get jurisdiction over I-5, and that you subsequently did do that. Was the purpose annexing the other side so that you would get jurisdiction over I-5?
Can I speak to that? I was on city council, and it was presented to us at that time. The property owners across the freeway have a RV park. It's presently now Ingram RV. They had requested to become annexed. There is some land north of there that will be the site of a future reservoir for our well water protection enhancement. I realized that many people, and again, this is, it's a different administration now. It was presented to us that they had requested to come in, and I do believe that if it was a perception that it was to get access to patrol I-5. That was not with my knowledge. The fact is now that our city limits does extend across the freeway. We're a growing city. We have major employment regional basis there that straddles the freeway, and so it is a part of the city of Cobourg. Does that answer your question?
One further question.
Quickly, because
sure.
We need to...
And I take it prior to the legislation that was passed last session, that other side of the freeway was not part of Cobourg. Is that correct?
Correct.
I don't think so.
Don't mean to rush you. We're half hour overdue. Okay, is there anything else you wanted to add?
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. We will. Is there anybody else in the audience on this bill? We will now close the hearing on Senate Bill 295, and we will move Senate Bill 546 and 568 to Monday's agenda. Judiciary is adjourned.